Well, folks, welcome back to another episode of Discovering the Truth with Dan Duvall. You know, I am really excited about a follow-up to All About Q. This will be All About Q round two. And we had a really awesome conversation at the beginning of the summer, Dave. And man, have some things developed over the course of the summer. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I know there's going to be so much to talk about. So it's good to be back with you, brother.
Yeah, well, it's good to be back with you again. As you may have noticed, the mainstream media kind of went off on Q the last week or so, and there's been a lot of developments, so lots to talk about.
Well, as a matter of fact, that's absolutely true, and you do a really good job doing your updates, and so many of our folks at Bride Ministries are listening to you and keeping up with the developments because, I mean, your QD codes are about as good as they get. And folks, if you haven't followed or tracked with Dave, check him out and check him out on YouTube because he really is following this developing phenomenon. Now, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the recent Q exposure in the media, good, bad, ugly, and so forth. What's going on, Dave?
Well, a lot is going on. And how you interpret the events is probably, I don't know, determined by your background. I have a lot of friends who are following me on Twitter who are kind of freaked out. They're like, oh no, the mainstream media is attacking Q. I'm like, yep, that's actually the plan. That was the plan from the beginning. The plan from the beginning was to recruit a group of researchers on 4chan, and then it moved to 8chan, to begin the work of digging into and doing some citizen journalism and research into some various things. And once their information became a little more public, through people like myself and other people who are on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube reporting what we're finding, the plan was for this information to hit the mainstream. It's kind of odd because a lot of people perceive it as if the mainstream media all of a sudden on one weekend jumped on Q, and there's dozens and dozens of articles, you know, all of them negative about Q. And it's easy to perceive that as an unexpected event. From what I see Q and the team saying is, no, this was exactly what they wanted to happen. In fact, Q's latest post says, before the big news can drop, we needed this thing to go mainstream. They kind of drew this out into the mainstream, and they've been waiting for this, for the Q movement to go mainstream, so that they could, and I think the big drop is what is going to be declassified, the FISA application on Carter Page, which is going to implicate a lot of people in the Obama administration, in the FBI and DOJ, former FBI and DOJ people, who developed a plot to make sure the President Trump wasn't elected, and if he did get elected, that they could either impeach him or remove him from office. This whole thing was planned out. And there's a lot of evidence, I believe, that's going to come out when this Carter Page FISA application, the rest of it is declassified. And that is what Q is posting about in the last few days, that they wanted this to go mainstream so that when that information comes out, a lot of people would know about it.
So all of this negativity surrounding Q, all of these articles, all of this news, is actually not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. It is it is bringing the conversation to the forefront, right? So now a lot of people are going in, they're looking into it, and they're researching, and they're digging, and they're watching videos, and they're listening to different people and their opinions. I think it's a good thing. I think it's very healthy. Some of the crazy stuff in the Q movement, it needs to be exposed. There is some really zany stuff that is not healthy and is not good, and hopefully that will be removed from the Q movement. There's controlled opposition, there is infiltration, there is all kinds of things going on in the Q movement. But this is, I think, overall a good thing as Q moves into the next phase of the operation, which looks like it's going to be prosecution. Further exposure of corruption and then prosecution.
Well, that's a fascinating viewpoint. I wouldn't expect you to have any less of one along these lines. Otherwise, we'd be sitting here saying, well, folks, let's forget about Q and move on. He's been exposed. But the thing is, and this is what I think people always need to keep in mind, most of the mainstream media takes their cues from the CIA. They have folks at the CIA that tell them what they can and cannot or should not actually focus their energies on and angles to take. And
Operation Mockingbird has been around for a long time.
Well, and that's what it's called, Operation Mockingbird. Folks, if you didn't know about it, look it up. So I'm always very wary about what the powers that be are slamming. And I want to talk now more about this because, okay, we want to address that right at the beginning because that's the big news, right? The Q's getting slammed.
Right.
Coming back to the FISA application. Okay. Tell me a little bit more about this and a little bit more about how bad okay. things can get.
The basic rundown on the FISA application is, and this is just, I've done a ton of research. I did a recent video on FISA, the process, the application, FISA court, all of that. And I did a very deep dive into FISA. It's like an hour and 5 minutes. And if people are interested in learning the ins and outs of FISA, the application process, the court, how that process was used to spy on the Trump campaign, watch that video. But I'll give you kind of a 5 minute overview of that whole process. We are in what I would call an intelligence war. It's become apparent as documents have been declassified, as the House Intelligence Committee has done their investigation, Devin Nunes has found out that Barack Obama's administration weaponized the intelligence apparatus. They used the spying and surveillance both domestically and through the Five Eyes agreement through UK, Canada, New Zealand. We have a mutual agreement. It seems more evidence is coming out that proves that the Obama administration weaponized the intelligence agencies to spy on political opponents, and I'm not going to go into all the details because there's way more involved in this. There's so much corruption on so many different levels in so many different countries on so many different targets. But the thing that's going to come out that people need to know about was the FBI and the DOJ, the process that they use to do surveillance on anyone that is perceived to be a foreign spy of a foreign nation, they use that process to spy on a political opponent during an election, right? So the Hillary campaign in 2016 was ramping up, and the Obama administration did not want Trump to be elected. The Obama administration and the Hillary campaign worked together in a very elaborate process. They essentially allowed private contractors access to the FISA database that is maintained by the NSA. The NSA has a large database, all people's phone calls, emails, text message, everything. It's all in the NSA database. The NSA maintains that database, and they allow the FBI and Department of Justice access to it if they have a warrant, if they have probable cause, if they have a legitimate reason to access the database. What the FBI and DOJ did was they allowed private contractors to access that database illegally to get information on people like Carter Page so that they could take that information, put it into a dossier, hand it off to British intelligence sources who would then rework the dossier. It would come back to the FBI. The FBI director, James Comey, And the DOJ, Attorney General, Sally Yates had signed off on one of the FISA applications. Rosenstein signed off on one. And I think Dana Bente also signed off on one. So you had someone from the DOJ, someone from the FBI. They take this laundered intelligence information, which came from the database. They took it to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court and requested a authorization to spy on Carter Page. The tricky thing about Carter Page is he was accused by the FBI of being a spy. The FBI went to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court and told them, we believe Carter Page is a Russian spy. We want a Title I authorization to spy on him, surveillance. And Title I surveillance is the most intrusive kind of surveillance. It's not that they're looking at your text messages or emails. They are monitoring all of your communications with everyone in your circle of influence. Anyone that you talk to, anyone you can come in contact with, those people are also under surveillance. Because Title I surveillance is given when you believe the person is a threat to national security, a terrorist or a Russian spy of some kind or who's involved in espionage. That's the kind of danger level that a Title I surveillance order involves. And that's what they got on Carter Page. The really bad thing about this is they went and requested an order to spy on Carter Page in June and probably August of 2016. But Carter Page was an FBI informant in March of 2016. He was working on a case. He had been working as an informant for the FBI for 3 years. Evgeny Buryakov was a Russian operative, and the FBI was working on a case to prosecute this guy. Carter Page was their main witness. He was their informant. In March of 2016, he was their informant. In July, he goes to the court and says, no, we think Carter Page is a Russian spy. We want to surveil him. Right? So this is all going to come out in these documents. All right. Carter Page somehow is worked into the Trump campaign. They get him into the Trump campaign. They get an order to spy on him, and now they can spy on everybody in the Trump campaign.
Oh.
They did the same thing with Paul Manafort. Paul Manafort was also under FBI surveillance. He had been under FBI surveillance since 2014, related to activities that he had with Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So they had Paul Manafort and Carter Page brought into the Trump campaign so that they could spy on the entire campaign through those two people. They used the government spying apparatus to spy on a political opponent. They falsified information. When you present an application to the FISA court, you have to sign an affidavit swearing that you have verified the evidence you're presenting before the court to be true and factual. They used the dossier, the Steele dossier, which James Comey himself testified before Congress and told President Trump was a salacious and unverified document.
Wow.
That's the document they used to get the order to spy on Carter Page.
That's a big deal.
So they presented false information before a federal court. They lied. They covered the whole thing up. They spied out a political opponent using our surveillance apparatus. They used that whole apparatus to start the Mueller investigation. That was a pretext for all of this. Was they wanted to manufacture the appearance that Trump was colluding with Russia. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it.
That is so good. Okay, so that takes me to the next point, because I want to get you to talk about this from the vantage point of what's coming out with Q. And that is, okay, Donald Trump Jr. is on the hot seat right now. He was in a meeting with Manafort and others. This is all over the news. It's like, all right, they were colluding with Russia. They were getting all this data. against Hillary Clinton, knowing that they were getting it, and now they're trying to cover it up, so on and so forth. Trump's a criminal, and just today I heard someone say he should resign because he's no longer fit for office on MSNBC. And it's just like, okay, clearly the media is sending a message. They have an agenda, and that's to get him out of office. Okay, what's going on here?
Can I give you some, all right, here's what people don't know about that meeting at Trump Tower.
Please talk to me.
Dude, you're not going to believe this.
This
was such a setup. We're talking about Natalia Veselnitskaya, the Russian attorney.
Yep.
Who, she came to the U.S. ostensibly to bring some information to the Trump campaign, which was basically opposition research on the Hillary campaign. Right? First of all, she was not allowed into the U.S. Her visa had been denied, her visa request. Loretta Lynch had to personally approve a temporary visa to allow her to come into the country. She had been involved in some shady dealings in the past, and she had her visa yanked. So Loretta Lynch had to do a special deal to get her into the country. Number one. Number two, the day before Veselnitskaya met with Manafort and Trump Jr. at the Trump Tower, she met with Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS. And she met with Glenn Simpson the day after she met with Don Jr. and Manafort at Trump Tower. Now, that's significant because Fusion GPS is the private, one of the private contractors that accessed the FBI database and was building the dossier and was building, helping build this opposition research on Trump.
Oh, wow.
All right, in the intelligence community, there's actually a term for this. When you send out somebody, you do a briefing with your operative before they go into their meeting, you tell them what they're going to accomplish, what the objectives are, the questions they need to ask, basically just kind of a briefing of, look, you're going into this meeting and these are the things we want you to accomplish. Veselnitskaya takes her orders from Glenn Simpson the day before she goes into Trump Tower meeting. She goes into Trump Tower ostensibly to give Don Jr. and Manafort, and I think Jared Kushner may have also been there, to offer them some information about the Hillary campaign, some dirt. According to everybody in the meeting, nothing happened. It was a big nothing burger. She has this meeting. She talks and talks and talks. Nothing ever comes of it. She never gives them any information. And everyone walks away from the meeting like, this is like a biggest waste of time. It's like, why do we even have this meeting? Okay, the next day, Veselnitskaya meets with Glenn Simpson. This is the post-meeting discussion. What happened? What did they say? How long was the meeting? What did you tell them, right? So Glenn Simpson is getting his information from Veselnitskaya, which that information goes into the dossier and goes into the opposition research that Fusion GPS is compiling against Trump. Okay.
Whoa.
The meetings that they set up with Trump's people were all merely designed to give the impression that Trump's people were colluding with Russians. I suspect that there were other people who had other meetings that were set up. Well, Jeff Sessions. Early on, people were saying that Jeff Sessions met with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador Kislyak. And they were making a big deal about, were you ever alone with the Russian ambassador Kislyak at this particular meeting? And what did you say? And what did he say? And what were your connections with him? And did you, what did you talk about? There was all this innuendo that Sessions may have been colluding with Russian ambassador. That meeting was set up by the Obama administration. Okay. people don't understand how much effort they went into set up these meetings with all these Russian people, with Trump's people, to try to create the illusion that they were colluding with Russians. That this whole thing is about creating a narrative and continue to spin this whole thing that Trump and his two people were colluding with Russians. But it looks more and more like the Obama and Hillary team set all those meetings up.
That's a really, really fascinating addendum to all of this information that's coming out. And yeah. I'll tell you, well, it makes some sense. Now, obviously, if you are playing against the deep state, they're going to have layers of plans in place should things not go their way. And so it's no wonder that as things, and I believe a lot of things have not gone their way, layers of the plan are being implemented. And do you think that this is going to prove to be a major hurdle for the Trump administration because they're not going to let it go?
It's a house of cards, and it's about to collapse. The case against Trump is going to be blown away. There really isn't much of a case against Trump. Mm-hmm. There is a very strong case against the Obama administration and the Hillary campaign. We're going to find out more information about how they colluded with the UK intelligence, SIS, MI5 and MI6, and the UK government was complicit in this plan to make sure Trump didn't get elected. That is about to come out. The dealings with the Russians, how Hillary's campaign colluded with people like Veselnitskaya and other Russians to come into the States and give the appearance that Trump was mixed up with these Russian people. There was coordination between powers in Russia and Hillary's campaign. that is going to be exposed. The Five Eyes connection, especially with UK, is about to come out. I actually had a dream about that not too long ago.
Okay, can I get you to talk about the dream?
I've been having a lot of dreams lately about things that Q has been posting. In one of the dreams, I saw the exposure of the corruption in the British intelligence community and how they had colluded and they had aided and abetted what amounts to espionage, illegal espionage on Americans. And they have a vested interest in it, and that's going to be exposed. The dreams are coming so fast about all these things being exposed. It's kind of crazy. I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see indictments pretty soon. Actually,
that takes me to the next question I have, because I want to let you talk about the Hillary Clinton email server.
Right.
What's going on there?
What's going on there? Well, the FBI Vault Twitter account just released, partially redacted, but not all that redacted, notes from the Hillary email investigation from the FBI records. My. Things that the government is trying to hide. So if you plow through those documents, you learn some interesting things. Number one is evidence that Peter Strzok and James Comey lied about the email investigation before the election. So you remember when Comey came out on July 5th and exonerated Hillary and said no prosecutor would prosecute Hillary. She was careless, but not, you know, legally negligent and all this other stuff. So Hillary was exonerated. And then the Anthony Weiner laptop shows up in the evidence bin in New York with the NYPD. It's turned over to the field office in New York for the FBI. They send a request to Quantico to get a search warrant because the current warrant they had didn't allow them to look into Weiner's emails at laptops. They found, I think 335,000 BlackBerry messages and 350,000 emails, and they were all from Hillary's account. So they had to get a search warrant. They sent a request to FBI headquarters. Andrew McCabe sat on that request and never authorized a search warrant because they wanted this thing to go away before and wait till after the election. I think that request went out either late September or early October. McCabe and Strzok knew about it and kept it quiet and didn't tell Comey until the end of October, right before the election. Comey kind of panicked, and then he says he sent a search warrant to the New York FBI field office to give them permission to look into the emails on Anthony Weiner's laptop. They, through their wizardry, they were able to deduplicate a lot of the emails, and they told us publicly that they were able to look at all the emails and found that there was nothing in there that was needed to be further investigated, and they closed the email investigation, I think, 5 days before the election. All right, that was the narrative that Peter Strzok told and James Comey told us. They investigated all the emails on Weiner's laptop, closed the investigation, it was all done. In this FBI vault release from a couple days ago, there's actually the order that Peter Strzok signed to have the emails and the hard drive investigated, had their technology group go through all the emails. That order didn't go out until November 9th, the day after the election. So they never looked at any of the emails prior to the election. They lied to the American people, said they had looked through the emails when they didn't even order the investigation until after the election was over. That's one of the things that came out of this FBI vault drop. The other thing is Hillary actually had two servers. She had the primary one, and she had another, a backup server that was being maintained by Platte River Network. And no one really knew there were two servers, but there were. I haven't been able to sort through all the fine details yet, but it looks as if the State Department has had Hillary's emails for a long time, and they are in FBI possession, and we're going to find out more about that. I did read in there that a lot of the emails were classified at the top secret or SCI level. The FBI knows for a fact that Hillary's server was hacked by enemies of the U.S., foreign nations. We don't know which ones. They haven't said.
Okay.
So there are some potentially damaging things that are coming out right now.
Okay. All right, I'm very much looking forward to finding out what is on that server. Coming back to sealed docs. All right, we talked about this in the beginning of summer, and after the program, we actually had one of our folks that has access to a legal database in their state look it up, and sure enough, there were thousands.
Went on the pacer.gov website and found the sealed indictments.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They're there, thousands. And that's just one state, And so throughout all the states, I can only imagine how many of these there are. But that's verified. And we had one of our folks at Bride look into this that is a lawyer. Now, I want to know, you said that these are going to begin to be opened up soon. How soon is soon, and what are they waiting for?
How soon is soon, and what are they waiting for? That is a big question. Q posted an updated list of the sealed indictments, and according to the gal who's keeping track of them on the spreadsheet, they added another 5,000 last month. So we're up to 45,000 sealed indictments. Now, the problem is you have to look through and realize not all of them are federal, and not all of them are necessary felonies, and there's different categories. So I haven't gone into and looked at all that. I don't have the time to do that. I'm just trusting the work that other people are doing. When are the indictments going to be unsealed? That is a really good question. It would be pure speculation to guess when. I don't have any revelation from God. and I don't have any inside information on that. I really don't know.
Okay.
I would just suspect some of them will be unsealed before the midterms, but I don't know that for a fact. I did have that one dream where I saw a lot of people being rounded up and arrested all at once. And that tends to be how RICO cases go. When you've got a large group of people that are corrupt and it's a racketeering charge, they tend to arrest a lot of people all at once with no advance warning. Just boom, one day, a whole bunch of people get arrested. So that I suspect that's how it's going to happen. I have no idea actually when that's going to happen.
Okay. Very fair. On Facebook and Twitter, downfalls. Is there a connection into the bigger picture? And what is it?
Of course there is. You know that. We just found out today Facebook is talking to the banking industry, right? And Facebook is telling the banking industry, look, if you give us access to our customers' banking information, we'll give you access to their personal data.
Come on.
I'm not joking. There's all kinds of articles out there now just today that Facebook is trying to negotiate with the banking industry to give them our personal information so they can get personal banking information on us that they can use on Messenger. So this whole thing is just, it's rolling along and there's more and more surveillance and more intrusion. And you would think that they would already kind of see the writing on the wall. This is not going to go well for them, but they continue to make those types of moves. Twitter and Facebook, we just realized now that Facebook has just banned Alex Jones. They have taken down his YouTube account. He has been banned from Facebook, and all of his content has essentially been stripped of the major platforms today, Alex Jones.
Wow.
All the major platforms basically just hammered Alex Jones all at once. Censorship is getting worse. Shadow banning, obviously, on Twitter is ridiculous. I have people that have been following me on Twitter for a long time, and they follow all my threads, and they tell me, look, I never get any of your notifications. I never see your stuff in my timeline. If I want to see anything you post, I have to go to your Twitter page. And sometimes I'll literally be watching one of your tweets, and a bunch of tweets will disappear in front of me as I'm reading them.
Oh,
it's crazy what they're doing. I don't even know how they get away with this. It's nuts.
Because that's what they do. They just do whatever they want because they believe they're above law,
regulation, above the law,
fairness, right. Anything, right?
Right.
I mean, there's so much funny business. I will tell you, when I not even recently, this was like 2.5-3 years ago on our YouTube channel when it was, you know, smaller than it is now, which is still not very large. Our person that was posting YouTube videos at the time would go in 1 week, right? Post a new video, come out, go back the next day and watch our views drop by thousands. Days later, after thousands of people had watched more of our videos, this was years ago. Our numbers have been messed with so much. If I add 30 friends on Facebook, because I get constant people, my followers will go down by 20 or 30 every time.
I have people on Twitter who have to refollow me on Twitter 4 or 5 times a week because Twitter keeps on disconnecting them and unfollowing me. And I have multiple people on Twitter who have to continually refollow because Twitter is disconnecting them. It's just crazy what they're doing.
Well, it is like across platforms too. This is I released a book called Prayers That Shake Heaven and Earth, and it has 83.
Nice reviews. Cover design.
Oh, it was absolutely extraordinary. Thank you, Denise. How is it that a book receives 83 reviews and is out of stock continually for, you know, 3-4 weeks at a time? It literally, it's like, who told you not to order more copies? So there's a lot of funny things that go on around censorship and intentional. I don't know how to explain it. The most direct is what you're talking about, though, this funny business with Twitter and Facebook and all this. Anyway, I want to come back to Russia.
Okay.
All right. Is developing a relationship with Putin safe for Donald Trump?
I believe developing a good relationship with Putin is the best thing that Trump can do, and the deep state is terrified of that. All you need to do is look at the reactions of Brennan, Clapper, Comey, Ash Carter, what's her name, Sally Yates, when they saw that Trump was having private meetings with Putin, they flipped. They went nuts. They went berserk. They demanded that the translators be deposed so that they could learn what they talked about in their private meeting. Why is the deep state concerned that Trump and Putin are talking alone to them privately? Because Putin sent a signal to them in the joint press conference when he talked about Bill Browder and the money that Bill Browder gave to the Clinton campaign that no one was supposed to know about. Putin was basically telling them, we have secrets on you, and guess what I'm going to talk to your president about? Trump already has all the information from the NSA. He's going to get information from Russian intelligence, and we're going to expose it, you clowns. And that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid that Putin and Trump are going to work together to take down the deep state. And I think that is what's happening. Trump has had communications with Putin for a long time. We know that they had a phone call on March 20th, I think it was, that wasn't supposed to be publicly known, but the Kremlin leaked the information about that call, and it kind of went out on the news. I believe Trump and Putin understand each other. I believe they respect each other, and I believe they want to work toward mutually agreeable goals of denuclearization, stabilization in Syria and Iran, in setting up a fair and competitive market for energy, and getting rid of corruption that has destroyed a lot of people's lives. That is what I see Trump and Putin working toward, and that is what terrifies the deep state. They don't want that.
So at the end of the day, you think it's one of the better decisions that Trump could be making?
Absolutely. It's strategic. It is going to reap massive benefits for everybody. Trump said during the election, when he was campaigning and he was in the debates, he kept asking Hillary and Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, what is wrong with us getting along with Russia? Why do we have to eternally think Russia has to be our enemy? Why can't we get along with them? And they didn't get it because, you know, a lot of them are deep state pawns. And they just have to keep spinning this. We have to be at war with Russia. We have to, you know, spend more money and more bombs and more wars. And Trump was like, no, we don't have to. We need to rethink this equation. We do not have to eternally be at war with Russia. And that's what he's going to prove that.
The truth is, you know, as I've done my own musings and ponderings on the subject of Russia, I've come to similar conclusions. It's like, if they're one of the biggest, you know, superpowers in the world, and we are not at great friction with them, that just means there's less to explode on this planet. I mean, geopolitically and otherwise. So it just doesn't make sense to think that they have to remain a firm enemy, like you're saying. And so, okay, fair. What's up with this assassination attempt?
I suspect there are a lot more assassination attempts that we don't know about that have happened. Mm-hmm. That the Secret Service and other government agencies have picked up on and thwarted. They're probably happening pretty regularly, and this is just another one. You're talking about the one at the Wilkes-Barre rally where this guy was arrested said, I'm hearing voices telling me to go kill Trump, and he was going to go to the rally, and he ended up at this gal's house. Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, you know, the guy's hearing voices, and he's like, he says, I got all these voices, they're telling me to do this stuff. All right, you know about MK Ultra.
Well,
you know way more than I know about it.
The last time I had you on the program, or I was on your YouTube channel, whichever way it spins, I really wanted to focus on Q, and man, you're the man for the job. But at the moment you get into this kind of conversation, of course, we could talk about that, especially some of these newer military projects, which employ a lot of voice-to-skull technologies. They're using, well, frequency-based technologies to put thoughts and voices inside of people that go beyond any kind of split personality issues. And there is a great deal of manipulation that can transpire. And I work with people that have this problem, both the frequency-based projections making them targeted individuals and a dissociation because of the trauma and projects they've been through.
Right. Right.
And they are deploying them as assets.
They are. Absolutely are. They've been doing it for a long time. And fortunately, Secret Service is on high alert. Their head's on a swivel, and they're always looking for information. And NSA is continually feeding them any communications that they get where they suspect someone is being programmed and is talking about those things. I think they're doing a really good job of picking up on that. I think there's a lot more of it going on than most people are aware of.
Okay. Last time I had you on, we were talking about North Korea. And it was a walk in the park, cakewalk, right? It shook hands. Great work, Donald Trump. What's going on?
I think he left Singapore early, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So what's going on now? Yeah, right.
What is going on now? Pompeo has been over to North Korea pretty often. He actually, I think yesterday, on Twitter, he said he was in communications with his counterpart, essentially the North Korean Secretary of State, and they are working on specific denuclearization programs, building some, I guess you would call it detente, building some trust, hammering out some issues. We've been getting the bodies back of soldiers who died in the Korean War. There seems to be a lot of cooperation going on. It's happening very quickly. I don't think people expected us to get back our captives, the bodies of the soldiers and everything else. It's all moving very quickly. You know, there were these rumblings, again, from Susan Rice, Sally Yates, Comey, about, no, North Korea, they're building more weapons, and they're building this, and they're building that. And Pompeo has been over there. He's almost, that's like his home away from home. Pompeo has been over to North Korea so much. If anything weird is going on in North Korea, Pompeo is on top of it. And Pompeo seems to be genuinely impressed with the way things are moving along with North Korea. I will say this. It's become obvious to me that of the people in Trump's inner circle, Trump probably trusts Pompeo as much as he trusts anybody in government right now. He and Pompeo are on the same wavelength. There's total trust. And Trump had to find a person he trusted more than anyone else to let them take care of the North Korea issue. And he has total trust in Pompeo. Pompeo seems to be doing all the right things. And I think I think people are going to be amazed at what happens with North Korea just in the next few months.
What are some of the other developments that have really, moved you as you've been following all of the different Q posts and developments throughout the summer that are just like, all right.
Well, one of the things that just makes me laugh when I read about it. All right. Mm-hmm. If you've been reading any of the mainstream media articles on Q, they love to tie the Q movement to be, and call it a Pizzagate-like conspiracy, right? Because there's this conspiracy about, you know, sexual abuse and among the powerful and the wealthy, right? Yep. So that's their angle. They're saying Q is just this conspiracy about this debunked Pizzagate theory, right? Completely overlooking the fact that people like Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey have been outed, arrested, removed from their shows. Hollywood producers, actors, you've got Allison Mack and the six people who have been indicted in relation to the NXIVM sex cult, which is a perverted, weird cult where they program them and they use them as sex slaves. What do you describe that like if you don't say this is like a Pizzagate thing? It's Hollywood people who are involved in a sex cult. And the mainstream media will completely no, don't look at any of that. Because Pizzagate has already been debunked, right? But
has it?
Q has been telling us, look, hey, what's going on with Allison Mack and the NXIVM sex cult and all these Hollywood actors being exposed, right? Hollywood and the media is like, no, don't look at that. We debunked that stuff a long time ago, right? To me, it's hilarious that the media thinks they can pull the wool over people's eyes.
They really do. They think that people are very stupid.
Right. They call them sheep.
Yeah. And you know, I've been looking at Q, and the conclusion I've come to is that this really is an operation designed to prepare people for what's coming.
Yep.
I really think that at its
absolutely core,
it's an operation. I think it's a group of folks, probably with the leader who's in charge, but a group, and you can, you know, correct me if I'm wrong and totally off base here, but working together with access to top level military stuff and also Donald Trump in a very personal way. And they are putting information out in an operation to engage interests, to engage a grassroots awareness, and ultimately to prepare people for what's going to unfold so that total shock isn't part of the equation. It's just going to be partial shock.
Right. That is what Q has said at the very beginning. This is a program to gradually roll out and uncover things that have been happening for a long time that people are unaware of. And if it isn't brought to light slowly and carefully, they'll either be so shocked, they'll go and burn down Washington, D.C., or they'll completely reject the truth. So it has to be done slowly. One of the things that I want to talk to you about.
Yep.
What do you think the relevance is of Trump mentioning the Space Force in every one of his rallies over the last 3 months?
Okay, so my first answer
speaking
is...
Speaking of unveiling secret government programs slowly.
okay, so I will say this. I mean, how far do you want me to go here? I mean, because...
Hey,
man,
it's your interview.
I will tell you that I work with people, right, that have come out of secret government projects.
Right.
Okay, so they were born, prepared... Some of them were sold. Some of them were simply, you know, they had different ways of being brought into these government projects and programmed. The programming often includes torture, torment, drugs. It includes rape, shattering of the mind. They interface it with technologies. They use lights. They use sound. They use all kinds of things. One of the things that many, many people do remember is being taken to certain NASA facilities to be put into, as children, on drugs. The astronaut circle machine, where they just spin them and it's...
Like a centrifuge or whatever?
Yeah, it's an exercise in anti-gravity. Okay. But they had to be put in these things as children. It's highly traumatizing to go in there as a child on drugs. It's really, really bad. And so they, what would they use something like that for? Well, a lot of these kids had parts that were prepared for secret space program operations. But what people don't understand about secret space program is that they're using more soul parts that are fragmented out of body in what we've uncovered than physical bodies being sent into space. And it's been a big part of evil agendas connected to the higher powers. One of the crazy things that people don't realize can happen, but it's actually being pumped into the public consciousness through movies like Avatar, is that they can take a person's soul essence or piece of it and prepare a body and put that piece of soul in the body and send the body out. We found this to be true in the case of many of the survivors we've worked with. They have parts that are prepared, literally programmed to do secret space operations, pulled out of the body and put in other bodies and sent off in craft or other things. And if their bodies die in space and so forth, they can pull the soul back. And the physical person that was programmed and maybe was $100,000, $1 million project, they don't lose that asset. It gets stranger and stranger. But what we need to understand is that there's been a lot of stuff going on over our heads outside of Earth atmosphere for a long time. I have reports to me coming back from operations on the moon, on other planets. They've used jump gates to get there. They've used craft and UFO to get there. I mean, this is all going to sound very, very wacky to people, but I have the memories. I have the notes. I have all this stuff. I mean, and it's like, you know, maybe one person's lying, maybe two persons lying, but when I have 15, 20, 30, 40 people each giving me their own account of these kinds of events from their perspective or the perspective of their brokenness, there comes a point where you say, I've hit a critical mass. This is actually happening. And
Right. I mean, I would have said 6 months ago, this is crazy. This is insane. This is the wackiest conspiracy theory I've ever heard of. Right. Mm. I have been slowly doing my own research, and I've been finding things that are confirming some of the stuff you're talking about. Now, for those people who don't know who Daniel is a Christian minister who primarily does ministry to people who have been through ritual abuse, mind control, and programming. He's been doing this for years. This is what he does. And he and I got connected because I do a lot of healing prayer, and I've developed an interest in healing emotional trauma, and he deals with a lot of people who need healing of emotional trauma. So that's our overlap. He and I have never discussed this before, but as crazy as it sounds, you have a lot of cases of people who are telling you the same things over and over again. And how do you dismiss all those people?
You can't. And here's what happens, right? The more I talk about it, the more people write in. And if they have the opportunity to sit down with me, because it's becoming harder and harder for me to sit down with new people because of the demand. It's as crazy as it sounds for what I say, I tell you, the demand for help from someone that is educated on these things is vast.
I know. And the number of people trained and equipped to do it is tiny.
It's smaller than it should be. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, this comes a certain point where everyone that has not, you know, had this experience maybe can't just assume that these kinds of things are not part of the equation just because it's not their experience. Because right. When you have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people coming forward saying, yep, this is what I've been through. You have to just pause and say, okay, am I in my own head, or am I actually basing my conclusions on what's really happening based on a reasonable assessment of what's being reported? You know, the Bible says out of the mouth of two or three witnesses, let all things be established. How about 40? Okay.
right. What do you do with that?
And the secret space program is just really, really interesting. There's a whole lot going on with this. And here's something that people need to realize. In verse 20 of Colossians chapter 1, it says, by the blood of his cross, everything in heaven and earth is brought back to himself, back to its original intent, restored to innocence again. Now, that's the Passion Translation. It's really beautiful English version of the Bible. But in essence, what it's saying is God has a redemptive agenda for the heavens and the earth. So for us to think that the only thing we have to concern with ourselves with, or that the enemy would be tampering with, is earth stuff and below the cloud line, is kind of short-sighted. That's the point.
I would agree.
So there's definitely stuff going on, Dave, and I think that Trump is hinting at it. And
well, let me share something with you. I had this dream before Trump was elected. I had a lot of dreams, prophetic dreams, where God showed me things before they happened. And this one dream, Mamma Mia, it was August before the election, so 2016. In the dream, I had to make a choice about who I was going to vote for president. And I chose Trump. And I went into this experience where it was like I went into another dimension, like in the future. And I was living in a society where there was no poverty, no lack, no disease. Everybody was living a lavish, blessed lifestyle. I was literally living in a society where it was like we were living in heaven on earth. And it was a result of voting for Trump. Now, I have had almost 2 years to think about that dream. And the things that Q has been dropping have hinted at the idea that there are cures for diseases that Big Pharma has kept hidden so that they can give us chemotherapy instead of the cure for cancer. They can sell us chemotherapy, keep us sick, make a lot of money off of it, but never heal us. Imagine if Trump, now I've heard Trump, he has called out Big Pharma a number of times and has told them, your corruption and your profiteering days are over. Prices are coming down, but that's only the beginning of it. Q dropped this. It was a question for us to look into the deaths of, the mysterious deaths of people who researched holistic and natural remedies. And I found 80 people that have been killed in recent years, unsolved murders, and they're all researchers in healthcare.
I'll say this.
And the next day, articles showed up on the internet proclaiming the release of the discovery of a new antibiotic that would essentially cure all of the multi-drug resistant forms of bacteria that we have not been able to cure for the last 20 years. The next day, a news article came out about that. And Q said, look, either they will put these cures out there or we're going to expose their corruption and they can face the public anger. I suspect that Trump is going to force the hand of some corrupt people if Big Pharma has been hiding cures for their own, you know, greedy purposes, and all that stuff is exposed and the cures come out. What would happen, think about this financially, what would happen if the wealth of the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, George Soros, the Saudi princes, what would happen if 10 or 15 or $20 trillion worth of wealth were suddenly returned to average people? What would happen if HIV, hepatitis, and all those diseases were suddenly cured? What would happen if the CIA was no longer able to create wars for human trafficking, organ harvesting, weapons sales, heroin production? What would happen if all that was done away with? Well, you see where this is going?
That hits the deep pockets of the 0.1%.
Yes.
Dave. That's where the real power brokers get their pockets hit.
What happens if all those people Okay. The Global Magnitsky Act, the executive order that Trump signed December 21st of last year, that allows the Treasury Department to freeze the assets of people known to be involved in human rights abuse, human trafficking, and corruption. Okay. They have already frozen the assets of a lot of people. In fact, there was an article that came out in the springtime about seven Russian oligarchs, billionaires, all of them, they had their assets frozen because they had been proven to be involved in some very corrupt practices. What happens if the government is able to seize the assets of corrupt, wealthy people and return that money to average people like you and I? Instead of somebody living on $20,000 a year, they may be living on $40,000 a year. If you are able to cure drug addiction and alcoholism? We would be living in a society that is blessed, that is prosperous, and it is almost like heaven on earth. And I believe that the information that Q is putting out and the agenda that I think Trump has is to expose all this crap, take the money from the rich, from these rich, corrupt people, and give it back to the average people to reveal cures that we've had for a long time, to reveal technology, energy technology that we've had for a long time that would make coal and oil obsolete. And I think we're going to see some radical transformation, changes in society in the next 5 years. People are not going to even believe what it's going to look like 5 years from now when they look back.
Well, I'll tell you this. There's a documentary that people need to watch if they haven't seen it yet. Okay. This documentary is called Cancer, The Forbidden Cures. Cancer, The Forbidden Cures. If you're listening to this YouTube, make that your next stop. Or if you listen to my podcast, make that your next stop. Cancer, The Forbidden Cures. Because I'm telling you, this documentary, which is old, goes through a whole series of times cancer was cured. And then that cure was suppressed by Big Pharma and people that they had, in their pockets. Why? Because the Big Pharma people become the FDA people that determine what goes and does not go through, or they just buy them out. It's really a big mess. There is such an agenda against naturopathic medicine. It is not really a conspiracy theory. It's a fact. because if you have a disease that you can make $50,000 to $100,000 per person on by medicating over an extended period of time, and suddenly you have that same issue being solved with a diet change and some naturopathic remedies that cost $50, suddenly you've lost a $50,000 stream of revenue as the power broker over that system. Now, cancer and diabetes are two of the biggest money makers in Big Pharma. Cancer and diabetes. Why? Because those things to treat over an extended period of time make them a lot of money.
Yep.
So why would you want someone with a solution to cancer that costs a person $1,000 to get away with it? When that's $49,000 a head that you're not getting, minus their $1,000. And by the way, let's multiply that over hundreds of thousands of people. The problem is that the robbery is unsustainable because there are more sick people than there are paying people into the insurance companies to keep the thing floating. And that's been a transition. They're not sure how they're going to fix in the near future. And I guess some of these real powerful people would say, well, we'll just kill them all once we've taken all their money. I believe that God has a better plan, Dave. I don't know about you, but
I absolutely believe God has a better plan. I don't think this was God's plan. What we're living with right now was not the plan.
Right. I mean, the Big Pharma and medical industry has been one of the greatest operations to enslave people to debt that there is. Now, more people have to declare bankruptcy that have medical insurance that can't afford their medical bills. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then, I think there's going to have to be some shifts, because I believe, just like you, that there are a lot of cures and a lot of things that once they are not suppressed because they're already out there, and certain people, if they know the right people and have the right access, have it anyway, it's going to change the lives of the masses.
Yep. And that is what the really rich and powerful in the deep state, that's what they fear. They do not want that information going public, because then they lose all control of everything.
My goodness. My goodness. I'm having a lot of fun in this conversation, Dave. this is really good. What are some of the other things that God is revealing to you in dreams that you are comfortable sharing or feel you have a release to share?
Probably 90% of my dreams are about Q right now.
Wow.
They're about things that Q is going to post. Healthcare, actually. Had a dream, I think it was Friday or Saturday night, where the next thing that Q, not the next thing, but I was putting together research based on drops that Q was posting about healthcare. And now that since we've been talking about healthcare, I believe that Q is going to switch topics or bring up the topic of healthcare, and it's going to become a much bigger issue on Q's board soon. And that's going to have a bunch of us doing research on what has been hidden in the healthcare industry, what has been concealed and what needs to be revealed. I think that's one of the things we're going to be talking about pretty soon.
I need to talk about one thing here. Did you know that Bayer bought Monsanto?
Yep.
Okay, this is why, folks, this is important. Okay, first of all, Bayer has its roots in Nazi Germany, okay, like back in the day. This is not a wholesome family company that just makes aspirin. They have a lot of things going on, and they do engineer drugs. Now, Monsanto has been engineering our food for decades. They have introduced all kinds of things into our persons through GMOs that are slowly killing a lot of us.
And why do you think so many people have gluten intolerance?
Intolerance is the right word.
We're talking about wheat. We're talking about a food that people have been eating for centuries. And now all of a sudden in the last 20 years, there's this epidemic of people who have allergic reactions, immune reactions to wheat. Why? You're telling me that's not connected to the GMOs?
Of course it's connected to the GMOs. And the fact of the matter is, you know, they've been engineering this stuff, but with Bayer buying Monsanto and putting this drug company and this food corporation engineering all of these seeds under the same umbrella, you're going to have a whole new level of engineering capacity for food. And I think that if they are permitted to get away with it, they would like to put more, can I just say, poison into the food that we are forced to grow and then consume. And I believe that there has to be a decisive move against what they're.
Yeah, I would imagine that Trump and his people are pretty hip to that. And I think they have a plan to neutralize the effect of that agenda. I don't know specifics. I see what Trump is doing. And when he identifies corrupt practices or things that put people into bondage, he is not going to let too much time go by before I think he addresses that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dave, I'm going to be praying.
Me too. Me too. I would love nothing better than for Denise to be able to get rid of her gluten issues. She can't eat gluten. It wrecks her GI tract. I have so many friends who are, you know, they have autoimmune issues of various kinds, everything from arthritis to, you know, well, you name it. And I think a lot of those things could be quickly dealt with if cures and causes were not being concealed by evil people.
Well, folks, I'm going to say this. The biggest thing at play here, in my opinion, is that the agenda of Jesus Christ, which is good, is being pursued in prayer and in whatever sphere of assignment or authority that we have. And I believe that our prayers are going to move a divine hand over this whole situation that's going to cause things to work together for the good of those that love God and are called according to his purpose, which includes, you and I, our listeners, those that know Jesus and those that don't know him yet. I just want to ask you this, Dave, is there anything that you want to add onto this conversation before we press pause and hopefully plan for a round three?
No, I think I have covered everything I want to cover right now. Okay, I can't think of anything else I'd like to add.
I believe that we are in an epic moment in history. No matter what side of the fence you're on, it is definitely some exciting stuff that's going on. And I believe that this is going to end in the best way possible. So, Dave, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Dan, for your insights, observations, and for having me on the show. I always love talking to you. You know that.
Hey, love having you on the show, brother. Folks, until next time, God bless and Godspeed.